this is the Center for a Vital Community in Sheridan, Wyoming.
Great. Anyone else? I've noted about 20 people, but I think there's even more people who are on the call. But I think we can get started. This is Bonnie Bezzotta, and I am the coordinator for the Bridges Sector Calls. At this time, I'm also get to be a co-presenter. Hi, welcome. With Jamie Murphy. So we are very excited to share with you today how our community has really tried to apply the Bridges concepts in relationship to the business sector and employment issues. And really, we've been looking at how we can develop a double win for our community. So how can we get better outcomes for employers and more stability for people transitioning out of poverty?
Thanks, Nate.
Because we know that really employment is the bridge out of poverty. That is sort
Brian
of clear
Kessinger.
To all of us. And we know that a lot of our organizations are focusing on services that help people alleviate suffering and manage poverty, but how do we really build resources and stability so that we can help people transition out of poverty? And so just a quick background, we started 8 years ago as a community, a volunteer community effort in South Bend, Indiana, and that was in 2004. In 2006, we started running Getting Ahead programs with partner agencies, and our idea was really how can we seed these ideas throughout the community and sort of aiming for a tipping point. What would it take to really start shifting our resources and our thinking in our county so that we could start making a wider impact on poverty? In 2008, we started as a nonprofit. So it's been just about 4 years that we've been operating as a nonprofit. And during that time and through really this wide network of 14-plus partner agencies, we now have over 600 Getting Ahead graduates. About half of those have come through a wonderful program at our YWCA that does domestic violence and chemical dependency programs for women, as well as a wide network of other partners from homeless shelters to our community college. We've trained probably about 3,000 people in various capacities on the Bridges ideas, and we've rolled out some next step programs, a financial management class and monthly networking meetings as a way to connect our graduates with allies in the community and help build social capital and resources while we all sort of learn together. And early on, we felt that we really had to tackle this employment piece. So today, we're going to focus a lot on that. But before we get into the conversation anymore, I'd like to introduce my partner, Jamie Murphy. And Jamie has been just a wonderful partner for us. She's an HR professional and is a member of the Society for Human Resource Managers. So I'm going to let her introduce herself. And we're each going to share parts of the conversation today. Keep an eye on our time so we can leave lots of room for questions and conversation at the end. So, Jamie?
Hi. Can everyone hear me okay?
Perfect.
Good. I actually got into the Bridges Out of Poverty, process several years ago when I was working in HR, and I was actually working with staffing and recruiting, and had an opportunity to go through the classes and really sort of fell in love with the idea. And it gave us an opportunity dealing with the type of folks that we were dealing with daily, our clients, who were sort of what we would call having habitual issues with tardiness and presenteeism, absenteeism, same things over and over again, just really were having and struggling with some issues with being prepared for work, which then in turn they were unable to keep their employment. So we were really, or I personally was really connected and drawn to the Bridges concepts. I was very active with SHRM at that time, Society for Human Resource Management here in Michiana. So I had an opportunity to start a committee. I served on their board at that time and asked if I could introduce this committee and bring together some HR professionals that were also passionate about not only doing their job, but solving some of the issues that they were having internally within their building, but also taking a look at the person and really wanting to assist. We find that a lot of HR professionals get into HR, they like business, but they also do have that need for wanting to help people and wanting to make a difference. And so those folks that got involved really saw the connection between the two, but knew that they needed additional resources and also knew that they needed additional training and wanted to share their ideas about what they could do to be a part of that. So I kind of head that part of it up, and then from there, Bonnie and I have worked together to keep growing the committee and to keep growing our ideas.
I wanted to say one of the real pleasures I've had in doing this work is getting linked with SHRM and with HR professionals like Jamie, who bring great passion and really sharp, keen minds to this. I keep going to talk about today. One is we kept looking at within with a really great board that has some very good business and nonprofit leadership goals, we kept looking from the very beginning at this question of how do we find business solutions that we often look at it through the lens of social service and charity development issues, then how can we look for business solutions? And that it's important to get HR professionals involved for all the reasons that Jamie just mentioned. And for us at SJP Bridge, the SHRM members have been really great translators for us. I don't have a business background, and I'm trying to learn how to think from a business perspective, but it's a skill set I'm learning. So the HR professionals have been really wonderful at helping us translate material for that business setting. And we really also believe that the Bridges framework is critical to this, that it's like a Rosetta Stone that we can use to translate the experience beyond and management with the employees coming out of poverty, as well as with the larger social service provider network. A fourth thing is that we know that it's really people to keep jobs even more than
Excuse me, could you move a little closer to the speaker, please? We're really having a hard time hearing you.
You bet. I'm right. Is this better?
Much
no.
better. Thank you.
Not as good.
Okay. A little bit better anyways.
I'm right on. Is this better, everyone?
No. Oh, we're still not hearing as good as we did when the conference first started.
Sounds good.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. I'm not sure what to do about that. I haven't changed phones. Maybe I can switch
yeah, you
with you.
Can you guys hear me better now?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Sorry about that. We switched phones, so let's see if this helps. Do you need me to repeat anything, or are we good?
Please repeat.
Okay. So I'm going to make kind of 5 points about how we're thinking about this problem of linking employment and business to poverty. So the first thing our organization said is we think of poverty as an economic development issue, not just as a social services issue or sort of taking charity approaches. So if that's the case, then how do we find business solutions to poverty and expand the kind of thinking that we bring to the table? The second point was that it's really important to get the HR professionals involved because they're wonderful translators of being able to help us think about how to describe the problem and come at the problem from a business standpoint. So our SHRM connection has been a really critical one for us. A third point that we think is really important is the Bridges framework is a kind of Rosetta Stone as a way to translate between the CEO, HR, and management perspective and the experience of people coming out of poverty and sometimes the language and thinking of people in the social service sector. So we've been always trying to build in a lot of training for the HR professionals and others in our community. A fourth thing is that we've really seen that getting a job is hard, keeping a job is harder, and then using that job so that you're building stability is the last piece. And how do we address all of those issues for getting ahead graduates and other people in poverty in our community? And the fifth one is, again, if we're really thinking of this as an economic development concern and getting business leaders to be at the table and helping us think this through, then we really do have to look at employment as a key piece. And I really want to acknowledge three places that we've looked to for leadership and really strong models, and that's Cascade Engineering, The Source in Grand Rapids, and Working Bridges in Vermont. And Lisa Falcone, who's the director there, is on this call. So we've got a great resource. And she did an earlier Lisa, didn't you do an earlier one for us?
I haven't done one of these phone calls before.
Okay, good. So good. Maybe we can get you to do one as well, because they've learned so much. They've really paved the road for the rest of us there in Vermont. So those are kind of five things we just wanted to start off as sort of describing where our thinking is at. And to just give you a very quick overview of where we've arrived, which is really launching an employer resource network in 2013. So we're going to tell you what that is and what it's going to look like for Northern Indiana. But before we get there, I sort of want to describe the steps we've taken, because I think each of those steps along the way are possible models for others of you listening in that that might be relevant. So after we had Getting Ahead going in 2006 for a couple of years, and Phil told us we need to think about next steps, and we could really see that, as I'm sure you've experienced. People come through that those 45 hours, and they're really ready for something next. And we know that it's a long journey to move out of poverty, 2, 5, maybe 10 years, maybe longer. So how do we support people in this process? So we put in place our financial management class. It's a 20-hour, 10-week program that really starts where people are at, with no judgment and no assumptions about what people do and don't know about the financial institutions and financial literacy, and knowing that there's a lot of vulnerability and exploitation of people in poverty that we want to give people skill sets for. That's been very successful, and we've had about 100 people go through that program and a lot of interest now in our community. We also put in place monthly networking meetings. There are monthly meetings for graduates and allies to come together in our community to share resources and conversations and sort of mutually learn about poverty and its components in our own community and in our own backyard. That's not this conversation, but we've learned a lot from that process as well, and we're doing some redesigns for 2013. But then we knew we had to move to employment. So then we started the Future Story Project in 2009, and we were really looking at how can we support graduates in getting and keeping employment, and looked at the Cincinnati Works model as well. And we learned a great deal from that program, and some of those lessons I'm going to share, because we actually laid that program down, did sort of a deep dive in looking at what's the better way for us to use our resources for our organization, and then landed on the Employer Resource Network. But I want to pause that for a minute and let Jamie talk a little bit about the Future Story Project. So what that really was, just to say quickly, was how do we link our Getting Ahead graduates to jobs in the community? How could we identify and work with employers who are willing to take a risk? We have a lot of our graduates who have multiple barriers, many with felonies, poor work histories, no GED or just a recent GED. How could we develop the relationship with employers and try to bridge that gap for people to get a job and then stabilize through that job? And so that was really where we got connected with SHRM. And Jamie's going to talk a little bit about why she jumped on board at that point in time and sort of some of her lessons learned from that.
Okay, we're switching phones again. We actually stepped in at that point with SHRM, and we had had a few people that were interested that were familiar with the Bridges Out of Poverty model, and there was a lot of discussion starting to happen, and we were able to form a committee. We were also able to gather some valuable information from HR professionals to really figure out what the needs were in our community and what they were facing every single day. And anyone that's worked in HR or been in a hiring process probably is not surprised by any of those things. You know, absenteeism, tardiness, all those things I sort of mentioned before, the communication breakdowns, that's what they were spending so much of their time doing as HR professionals that sometimes they were struggling, of course, trying to get other types of work done or hiring done or because they were doing so much problem solving. So we sort of, you know, began to kind of listen to them and open up that conversation with HR professionals. And then we started, you know, being able to give them then some resources, especially when it came to communication and addressing certain issues, especially folks that had lower wage employees, helping them understand some of the concepts of hidden rules and working towards some training for especially the mid-level supervisor level, which we're even more so developing that further. But that was a big focus as we thought that there were some key people in the building that needed to, to have some training. But it also gave us an opportunity to have someone that was sort of in the middle, as Bonnie kind of mentioned as well, to sit down and have those conversations with CEOs and CFOs and really talk about their strategic plan and what they really want to see happen with their business and what their social responsibility is as a company in our community. And that's probably the main goal, is that ultimately we want to, you know, control absenteeism and turnover because we know that's a huge expense if someone doesn't stay after that first 6 weeks of employment. You know, it's a major cost. You're looking at maybe $5,000 to $7,000 per person. And an HR professional can tell you that's a, you know, huge expense to not keep someone 90 days. So that money piece is what interests, I guess, your upper management, and they start to, you know, take a look at their workforce. But then we have some of those conversations about, you know, what's your plan and where do you see the term from now? Especially if they do have lower wage employees. I thought somebody said something. The other part too is we've been able to sort of trial and error some things. You know, we know that we have places to go and that there's still more development that needs to happen, and that's why we're really excited about the ERN idea. Our Future Story project actually was something that was recognized nationally here in Indiana, as well as state award. We won the Pinnacle Award, and so that was kind of a big deal for us because it's pretty prestigious. We had never worn it before. And a lot of that, too, was because we started also just in the very basic pieces with helping graduates go into the networking meetings and talking about interviewing and helping with resumes and sort of having those types of discussions with folks. And like I said, that has been just one part of it. And each year now that we've been involved, we sort of added additional responsibilities. And now we're taking more of sort of a look about the whole relationship with employers in general, not just the graduates, but how Bridges and employer groups can partner in the community.
Okay, we're switching speakers again. And I want to say, too, again, Lisa Falcone was just really great at helping us, and they had already forged those partnerships with SHRM in Vermont, and so we sort of followed in their footsteps. And also want to acknowledge our Memorial Community Health Enhancement, which was a key funder for our Future Story project. And so let me tell you a little bit about our successes of that program as well as our challenges. So in the 18 months that we had that program running, we started with 52 Getting Ahead graduates. Out of that group, we found 26 who were eligible for the program. We helped 20 get employed. Three here in our office as AmeriCorps members, one who won a prestigious governor's award for the state. At the end of that 18 months, 12 were still employed. Many had really significant barriers. 46% had felonies, 50% had negative work histories, 42% had addiction issues, and addictions was actually probably the largest issue we faced of people relapsing. And they often did really well in employment. That wasn't the issue, but other factors sort of came into their life that caused that relapse. And we had a number of our graduates. At that time, we had 200 graduates, and we are at 600 now. And probably at that time, about 80 were heading toward college for the first time, which was very exciting to see. So they were not as interested in employment because they were going toward the down the college pipeline. As Jamie mentioned, we co-created this Bridges for Business presentation along with Lisa Falcone in Vermont, and we've been tweaking that, and that's been a very successful 60 to 90-minute presentation. We had 13 employers involved, and two of them reversed their policy on hiring people with felonies, so we felt that was pretty significant. And one employer said, and I thought this was insightful, she said, For many years I've supported people in poverty, but I've never really had to help people transition out of poverty. It's like a new skill set for me. And so she was really reflecting on what changes they need to make within their company to really be successful in that. We presented through our community foundation to a nursing home learning collaboration. We had Dave Barrett here from Cascade Engineering, and he presented to 100 CEOs and community leaders. Jamie and Dave and our board chair was on a public television economic outlook program talking about bridges in the workplace. And we had a poverty simulation at Notre Dame University here in our backyard. And we also started a leadership component for graduates, really seeing the potential for having them inform our work as we moved ahead, and that's been a really important piece. We have a very good database tracking system through Community Collaborations Initiative that's been very helpful for us in gathering and analyzing data. And we did our first Getting Ahead at Four Winds Casino through their tribal development program. So it was very interesting to run Getting Ahead in the workplace. And through 14 interviews with different participants in that program, we found that 100% reported growth in 3 of the 11 resource areas, 64% reported growth in 5 or more resource areas, 71% had significant improvement in social supports and knowledge of the hidden rules, 64% reported significant improvement in emotional resources, financial resources, and motivation, 42% became banked, and 23% were no longer using financial predators, and half of listed new allies and mentors. So I know it's probably going to sound surprising that we decided to lay the program down, but we did. We really looked around our community, and one of the agreements we made when we launched our nonprofit was not to duplicate services already in the community and not to do case management because we have other really excellent programs doing that. And the more we got into the program, the more sort of case management needs came forward, and we decided to really redirect our graduates to Goodwill, Real Services, and some other very fine programs, and instead to see how we could move beyond sort of working with individuals and to trying to play more of a catalytic role. That's in our mission statement, and so we wanted to bring in business leaders in a different way. But we learned a great deal through this program and really learned about how much tenacity it takes to walk this journey with people moving out of poverty, as well as building capacity for our partner agencies and businesses as they learn more about what it really takes to be a partner in this effort as well. And so so we went through a pretty in-depth process with our board saying, what can be a role? We're a very small organization. We're just a few people here and lots of volunteers and other folks, but we're a small organization. And how do we really engage the business community? And so we went back to looking at what's called generically the employer resource networks, and specifically at the Source in Grand Rapids and Working Bridges in Vermont, and came back to saying this is what we felt we could provide to our community that's not existing here, that really built on the lessons learned from our Future Story project, but allowed us to go into a kind of a new corner of this conversation. So that is what we're going to be launching in 2013. And that program does some very simple but powerful things. It takes someone we're going to call a resource navigator into a partner business on a regular basis, usually 4 hours a week, and makes available to entry-level low-income workers the same community resources that are available to other people often not working that allows them to stabilize. So anybody in the company can come and sit down with any kind of problem, and the focus is on rapid problem resolution, not case management, in a way that allows that employee to stabilize, you know, not be absent so much. I don't know how it works in your communities, but when somebody needs to go get a utility bill assistance or something else, it's usually a good day and a half of running through the many hoops to get assistance from a variety of different agencies. So this would eliminate or reduce those kind of problems and really connect the safety net into the workplace in a way that allows those employees to have better retention and less absenteeism and more focus. But it's also coupled with the Bridges training for the staff so that we're getting the management staff to start thinking differently about their low-income workers and looking at ways that they can also bring resources in to help people stabilize. It connects the HR professionals with new information on community resources. It also takes, valuable HR time no longer has to get spent in trying to solve some of those problems they often don't have the best tools for. It's also a confidential process, and I think Lisa can tell you that in many of those companies, they see a higher usage of their EAP program because now the employees are understanding kind of in context how the EAP program can be used to help them solve their problems. We're also hoping to bring in some employee training through our, we're going to take our financial management class and break it into 5 90-minute lunch and learn units so that the working folks have access to some of the same financial management skill set. And we're looking at how we can bring in getting ahead. Another key piece is building in metrics right from the beginning so that we can show a return on investment for the employer. And we can also track what are the resources that are working best in our community and where do we have gaps. So that's kind of the ERN overview, the framework of how we're going to roll it out. And we've seen in both Grand Rapids and Vermont that this is a great way to build business champions, to bring business leaders to the table in an innovative way, and also lift to their, you know, sort of their perspective what some of the problems are for their employees that they might not be seeing otherwise. For example, the use of payday lenders. Lisa can talk about this better than I, but in Vermont, they've put in place some workplace-based low-interest loans, short-term loans, that have really made a huge impact for their employees as an alternative to payday lenders. So we think this is going to be a way for us to build those business champions in a way that allows them to see what the issues are, but also what the benefits can be to business when we come at this self-poverty in creative ways. And I want to acknowledge one of our businesses here in town, Specialized Staffing, which is a staffing agency, and they are going to provide us the entree into the first set of companies and have us working with some of their HR staff so we can kind of build capacity. We send all of our graduates to them because they are so good to work with, and they've already built in some really neat changes for people who come through their doors to try to make sure that they have success. Their CEO, Jacqueline Barton, here's what she said. She said, "Once I attended the Bridges Out of Poverty workshop, I had my aha moment and gained valuable insights into why our best efforts were often not enough. Now we are changing the way we do business for better outcomes. I know this will improve my company's performance, but what equally inspires me is that I can help bring an effective process to other companies in our area, and this is in my mind the surest way to address poverty." Jacqueline also said something I thought was very powerful in a meeting the other day. She said we often confuse poor work ethic with being under-resourced. So our employees that are under-resourced and all those issues that come up that get in the way of being on time or being focused or all those other things can be improved by addressing the resource issue rather than sort of identifying it as a character flaw or something else that we often do. So she's a really sensitive CEO that's going to be great for us to work with, and she's on the boards of two county chambers of commerce where we're going to be rolling this out, so that gives us great access to a network of other employers. So we've been investing significant time in the last 9 months or so we can pull a business plan together, and the tools for this, and the funding for this, and the other beautiful part about an ERN is that it's based on employer contracts. So employers are paying a cost of the program, and our goal is to start at about 30% of cost, but to eventually move that closer to 70-80% of the total program costs. And in an era when we're all looking for those sustainability dollars, we very critical. So, Jamie, I think we've covered most everything. I'd like to just open it up for questions and conversation if we can. Any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Do you provide the Bridges for Business program to others, or is this something that you trademark and only lives with you?
You know, that's such an interesting question. I mean, I tend to be very open source about a lot of this, and we, you know, our goal is to really be an effective model that we can share with other communities. That's even in our mission statement. So. And at the same time, we've invested heavily in being able to roll that out. But we would really like to look for a way to get this, you know, to other communities as well. So if you're interested, you know, you let me know.
Oh, absolutely, I will. Thank you.
What other, or, you know, does anybody want to share from their own experience and doing things in their community around employment and bridges? Does this make sense to people?
While people are thinking about that, do you have a website that we can access that what we've talked about or heard here in this conversation is available to us?
Yes, and you know, two things. One is I have to apologize. Our website is in process of being reconstructed, and I haven't done a good job of updating it. And one thing I'd be very happy to do is if you email me is to send you out my four-page overview and some background information, which maybe will be more helpful. But so let me give you both my email and the website. My email address is SJC for St. Joseph County, so sjcbridges@gmail.com, and our website is www.sjcbridges.org.
I'll send that out, you guys.
Thank you. And if you send me an email, I would be glad to send you some background information.
Okay, and I had one other question. You'd mentioned that there was some financial analysis being performed or was going to be performed on how there was a economic benefit to each of the organizations that participated. Did you say that's completed or something that's about to be undertaken?
Right. We're going to build that into the Employer Resource Network. So as we roll this out, we know that we need to keep metrics on how this is positively impacting absenteeism rates and turnover rates. So that's something we're going to build into our ERN as we launch it, and that's what we're working on. We're going to try to develop metrics in two ways. One is to be able to show return on investment for the employer, and building that in, and I'm going to circle back to that in just a minute. And the other is to be able to track the kinds of issues that are coming up for the employees so we can report back out to the employer on that, kind of quantify that. Obviously, it's a confidential process, so there's no names or anything involved. But and also to see, so these issues that are coming up, do we have the community resources to deal with them? We know transportation in our community is going to be a huge issue. But we feel like by being able to really collect that data and bring the evidence of the way that transportation is impacting those employees, that we hopefully then can get business leaders to begin putting their attention to that issue in a way that we haven't gotten a lot of traction to date. We've been working on this transportation piece for quite a while. And just to mention on the turnover metrics and that kind of thing, we're working through sort of the formulas that we're going to use and how we're going to track that. So, for example, at the source in Grand Rapids, one agreement they made with employers is that four transportation issues that get resolved is the equivalent of one retention, of the value of retaining one employee. So those are the kind of formulas that we know we're in agreements we know we're going to need to build in so that we can actually show a return on investment. But I will tell you, we went to a conference this summer, and on average, there's about a 290% return on investment that they're showing for employers. And if you send me your email, I can attach a couple of good articles on ERNs as well.
Yeah, I had another question. Do you find that you're doing more and more case management with your clients in as part of the seeing the desired results?
Well, we certainly did when we were doing the Future Story project. That was that case management piece, you know, was there and growing, and people have a lot of you know, instability, and addressing that instability can be very time-taking. And that is why we did choose not to continue with the Future Story project. That was the primary part of that. Now, when we haven't started the Employer Resource Network. We plan to roll that out probably in March. And so we know we're going to learn a lot from that. But really the goal is not to do case management. It's just to help that employee solve whatever issue is that's presenting to them. And I don't know if Lisa Falcone's still on the call, but if she is, she could speak to that, I think, a little bit too as well.
I am, Bonnie. I'm about to hang up. I'm sorry. I have to leave
that's
early.
Okay.
But in terms of what we do on site at workplaces, we try not to call it case management, because really what we're trying to do is help people resolve issues and typically around resources that they just don't know exist or are available to them. But we do have personnel that is shared across workplaces that we work with, and that person in our county really is available to individuals, but also works through HR and supervisors and managers to make sure people are planning ahead and know of resources. For example, right now we're, you know, in Vermont, we're in the height of heating season, and to apply for heating assistance, that really needed to happen in September. So for people who are just thinking about that now, that's not helping them necessarily. So what we're trying to do is help people be proactive and think about these things as they, you know, we can identify issues that almost everybody seems to encounter throughout the year. Child care we're talking about for summer camps, we're talking about in February. So it's really not a case manager per se, but more of really the name resource coordinator. And our situation is really about helping people identify resources.
And that's very much the model we want to use. And if people need more involved case management, there are other agencies in town that can provide that, or possibly the EAP programs.
I would just add to that, Bonnie, in terms of the EAP, when we started in Vermont, you know, we had some nervous Nelly EAPs thinking, well, that's what we do. And I think in every single situation, we have found that the EAPs, particularly those that weren't on site but were more phone calls, now we're finding that most of the companies we work with, their EAPs are now on site, and there is a relationship created between the resource coordinator and the EAP person where they're referring people back and forth. It makes sense that some things go to the resource coordinator and as something should go to the EAP person. And although we have not done an incredibly effective job of tracking that, our EAPs are saying that their usage is up. So I guess if you, I think we need to, we're getting ready to launch a real study on that to really be able to track that. But the anecdotal information is that, yes, their EAP usage is up because of the resource coordinator being on site.
And before we lose you, Lisa, I wonder if you'd just a minute to share. It's my understanding that your employer group that has sort of oversight of this project is looking now at the issue of the benefits cliff. is that right?
Yes. Yeah, we are. And in fact, we're kind of in the middle of that. For HR folks in our area, one of the issues has become when they try to give a raise or they want somebody to work overtime or weekends or differential, they were getting pushback from their employees who didn't want that, because really what that was is putting them in a position where they were actually taking a pay cut versus raising their earnings. So we have really created a coalition of employers who have been working on this issue for a while, and we're, in fact, having a little symposium this Thursday with the Commissioner of Human Services, and we have been participating on a work plan that we hope will impact some potentially policy and legislation at the state level that will change ways in which people are compensated so that they are not being put in a deficit if they take a 25-cent raise or a 50-cent raise, not losing things like their housing voucher or their heating fuel or their child care subsidy. So that's really in process right now, but what I think the lesson here is that the power of employers, the state certainly was very interested in convening these meetings and talking with employers because the policy impacts them. And so it was easy to get the commissioner of our human services to sit down with these folks and try to hammer this out. So that's a little different than we as social service agencies. If we went to the commissioner, we probably wouldn't get as far. So that's where we are. It's still a work in progress, but we're really hopeful that this next legislative session we might be able to even impact this legislation.
And that's the golden ring we're aiming for, is, you know, to really be able to get employer and CEO attention on some of these critical issues that we know can be a multiple win in the community for the business and for the community and for the individual. So, you know, thank you, Lisa. You're our shining light up ahead in the distance that we're aiming for. So.
Well, you're doing great, Bonnie, and I am going to hang up now, so I'll talk to you soon, Bonnie, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So you can see the potential impact of, you know, really trying to come at this employment piece through maybe a little different angle than we sometimes do. And for us, it's also a non-compete with anything else going on in our community. You know, there's a number of organizations that are trying to do the kind of direct, almost case management piece of getting someone to a job and stabilizing through a job, but not this employment-based piece. Other questions? Canadian people have any questions? Anybody anywhere? Okay. Well, we are so grateful for everybody's attention this afternoon. If you send me an email, then I will be most happy to reply with some background information. And if you have any specific questions that you know I can answer, I would be glad to do that as well.
Alrighty, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody. Have wonderful holidays.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.